This week on Art on the Air, our whole feature is with the region's own singer-songwriter, Kevin Friend, who fronted many local bands, including Mammoth, and has often been heard on Tom Lounge's Midwest Beat on Lakeshore Public Radio. He'll be telling his ongoing musical journey and sharing some of his music. Our spotlight is on Dune Summer Theater's 2022 season with artistic director Steve Scott and producer Elise Kermani.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's Breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And I'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air. They got a new 2022 season coming up. Our friends at Dune Summer Theater. We have the artistic director here, Steve Scott. And I guess, Lisa, I'm not sure exactly your title. You're kind of like the producer. So, you know, I want to be a producer. Welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Aloha. Welcome.
Larry. And Elise is actually... Elise does all the hard work.
Right.
I do all the fun work. Elise does all the hard work.
We're sharing. So. It's good. It's all good.
Well, we'd like to ask, first of all, I guess we'll go ahead and start with you, Steve, about what's coming up in the 2022 season. This is actually, I think you just announced it publicly like a few days ago, but we want to be part of that. So go ahead and tell us about the season.
Well, I am really excited about this season. And you know, our first kind of post-COVID, we can say that at this point, season. We're going to be starting off with a Pulitzer Prize winning musical, a beautiful show, serious in tone, but uplifting, called Next to Normal. It's about a family dealing with various crises, including mental illness, in some really unusual and highly musical ways. It's a lovely show. Big hit on Broadway when it was first done. It's been done by a number of theaters around the country, and I am thrilled to be able to direct that. And Andrew Flash, who has been our music director for the last few years, is going to be the musical director for that. So I'm very happy we're starting off with that. We then go to a comedy called God of Carnage, which I'm sure some people have heard because there was a film version of it a number of years ago. It's a hysterical play about two sets of parents who want to do the right thing for their children. They each have sons who have recently been in a school fight, and they're coming together to try to figure out how to handle this, how to broker this, and how to kind of bring peace back to their friendship. And I think it's sufficient to say that it does not go well. And we see parents turn from parents into 10-year-old children before our eyes in a really interesting and very funny way. It's a show for anybody who's ever dealt with children, anybody who's ever dealt with parents. I think we all find something of ourselves in this little conflict that we see. So that is going to be directed by Susan Padveen from Columbia College. And we're thrilled that she's going to come out to do that. Our third show is a review called A Grand Night for Singing, which includes a lot of the greatest songs from Rodgers and Hammerstein. You know, several years ago, before before lockdown, we did a kind of concert production of South Pacific, which is, I think, the most successful show we've ever done at the Dunes. And proving to me, anyway, that Rodgers and Hammerstein is kind of an eternal composing team. You know, every generation can find wonderful things in the music that they left us. So It's a Grand Night for Singing is going to bring together a lot of their works in slightly different settings outside of the productions that they were in. And because last year's outdoor season went so well, I think we're going to be producing this outdoors in July, which is a great time to be outdoors to watch a show. That is going to be directed by Lauren Katz, who is a very exciting young director from Chicago, with whom I've worked a number of times in the past. And then finally, we have our Broadway cabaret at Friendship Gardens, which last year was a major success for us and for Friendship Gardens. We're going to be focusing on the works of Stephen Sondheim to kind of honor his career and his recent passing. But it's going to also include works from a number of other shows, composers that influenced Sondheim, composers who Sondheim influenced. And it's going to be a great deal of fun in mid-August at the Friendship Gardens. And as I say, last year it was beautiful. I'm expecting it's going to be just as beautiful this year. So we got a lot of stuff lined up for this season, and I just couldn't be more excited about it.
Elise, tell us about the condition of the theater. You've been doing renovations and things like that. Last season, I think we were mostly outdoors, the combination of the pandemic. But tell us about that real briefly.
Yes. Well, we are starting the renovations, and they won't be finished this year, so everyone needs to be patient. And I do want to mention also... We will bring the Rodgers and Hammerstein inside if there's rain. So please get your tickets. Don't worry about the weather. We're going to make it movable. I can't talk too specifically about the renovations, but except to say that we are doing them and we're fundraising for them, and we will not be finished this summer. So we'll have little signs, you know. It's all good. We're very excited. Have a really good, powerful board of directors who's behind our work, and we're fundraising, and that's going well. So
great. Steve, is Next to Normal, has it been cast yet?
We are in the middle of casting it now. Much of it has been cast. We're kind of waiting to hear from a couple more actors. But the actors that we've got so far are incredible. I mean, yeah, it's a hard one to cast because you're looking for slightly older people. But we've found some great ones. We're on the way.
And what I can say is that they're all very individual. They look so different. That's one thing that's hard on stage when everybody looks the same, that they look very different. So, right. Hopefully.
Tell mom and daughter apart.
Exactly. There you go.
Well, real quick, Elise, we got just a little less than a minute. Tell us how they can find where you're at physically and also online and tickets and how that all works.
Yes. Well, we're right off Route 12, about a mile from the state line in Michigan. And get tickets, go to dunesarts.org. That's dunesarts.org. And you should be able to see all the links to the tickets right there.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air Spotlight. That's the Dune Summer Theater, and they'll be opening Next to Normal and a whole bunch more. And they also have some education programs coming up, which we're going to talk about in a later Spotlight. But Steve and Elise, thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank
you.
Good to
see you both.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And now we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air someone you've heard many times on Lakeshore Public Radio on the Midwest Beat with Tom Lounges, a good old friend of his, but we decided we'd tap him in for Art on the Air. He's a multi-layered songwriter, reaching deep into his heart and soul, creating stories filled with love and reality. From the early 80s, he performed as a frontman to many rock bands. Mammoth was one of them. Played with the likes of Humble Pie, Steppenwolf, Nazareth, Uriah Heep, and many, many others. And now in this season and 2022, he brings his songwriting talent to a whole new expression in public, brings to life and experience success. Please welcome to Art in the Air, Kevin Friend.
Aloha.
Well, good afternoon, my friends. Thank you so much. Down here in St. Augustine, Florida, and I certainly spend most of my young adult in the Chicago area, so I love talking to you guys. Thanks so much.
Yeah, we need you to shoot some sunbeams over from St. Augustine.
Well, it was spring, and then it became winter all of a sudden, didn't it?
It sure did. Well, Kevin, we always like to start our interviews with so our audience gets to know you. I don't know if you get to do this with Tom, but we'd like to kind of know your origin story, you know, like where you grew up, where you went to school and everything. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now, and then we'll explore other things about your life later on in, with your music. So tell us about yourself.
Yeah, tell us about sounds band wonderful. In elementary school.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I was in my first band, I was 10. I was in fourth grade. We did Stepping Stone. Of course, the Monkees. I'm not just stepping stone. I bought myself a Davy Jones tambourine, of course. Now, from what I recall, and I do believe this is true, there was not a microphone, but the guitar player did have a Sears Silvertone with the amp in the case. So, I mean, this was official stuff. I had fourth grade. I was 10. I had a drummer. He had a snare. That's all he had. And yeah, that was the drum, the snare, the silver tone, and my vocal without a microphone and with the tambourine. So that was my first.
Well, describe the rehearsals. Describe, did you perform at the school? I mean, how did you?
Well, no, actually, our one gig was in my classroom in fourth grade, Mrs. Farber. And this was Shrum School. Hoover Shrum, and this was Shrum School. It was a Hoover School, and a Shrum School. In Shrum, fourth grade, Miss Farber, she wasn't married, and I was hitting on her, you know, at ten. She was the doll. But we played Stepping Stone, and I believe Happy Together. I could call you up and rest the time. So we had it going. We had it going. From that point on, the next band I had was in eighth grade. I was the student. I was the president of student council, and you know, I wanted to either get in showbiz or politics, and actually, it's the same thing.
So, yeah, no kidding.
I was already in it, and then that little band there, we actually had a microphone, and we played at a little party there in our town in Calumet City. Of course, I grew up in KL City. A little guy in his garage, and she and the little girl had a birthday party, and we played, and it was just a wonderful thing. And then in high school, I had a band, with local there in Calumet City. Van Quackenbush was my bass player, who stayed with me for the next few years when we did in Mammoth. We did the Aragon and did the KQX and all that stuff. This guy was actually my bass player. Then in high school, the name of my band was CD and the Snaz, which actually came from a Mott the Hoople song. The CD and the Snaz, the Shoe Boys and the Satins, an old Mott the Hoople song. And we were hot. I mean, I sprayed my hair silver. I mean, I had it going. I had the long tux tail with jeans, of course, and platforms, and I had glitter on my, I mean, I was there. I was Elton John, you know, I was happening.
And you don't have to spray your hair silver now, do you, Kevin?
Yeah, I don't have to spray it anymore. Yeah. And then I graduated in 75, back in, you know, when Millard Fillmore was president, and whoever it was.
The 13th president.
We don't really talk enough about Millard Fillmore, I don't think. Anyway, and then Mammoth was actually already together. They were on the east side, 106th and Ewing, and Gary Flanagan, who manages Nate Venturelli right now. I think you guys probably know Nate. He's local there, but he's very popular in the country. He's got a country thing going. He was the guitar player. Steve Crabtree from Beat Boogie Drums out in Valpo, he was the drummer. And I just came in, and I'm going to be the new singer. So,
well, so how does that happen, though? I mean, so how, because they had a front man. So what transpires and how?
Well, they wanted to get rid of him. I was actually managing a Genghis formal wear store in Dalton. Strangely enough, right after high school. Hey, you want to manage a Genghis formal wear store? Okay,
sure.
But I want to be in a band too. So I go to the East Side and I audition. Or whatever, and they said, "Yeah, man, you sound great." So now they were an all original band, you know, which was my forte. I want to be an original guy. I'm writing songs, so I got in there, and boy, I just started writing, and it just all came to me. I wrote my very first song in eighth grade. I was at the talent show. I digress. Back in eighth grade, I actually wrote my
music.
I'm sorry.
And lyrics.
Yes. The days will pass. They're all the same. You think of her and you call her name. It's got to be brokenhearted because that's what we're here for. It's to write songs about the brokenhearted. That's always my best song to a brokenhearted song. And that's when I wrote my first song. But I started writing. Then now I'm 18. I'm just out of high school. And managing Genghis formal wear and joining Mammoth. And so I started writing, and I mean, it just started coming. And we got a local record deal with a guy named Ray Peck, and the label was Kiderian Records. And of course, no money, you know, he paid for the studio or whatever. And I had two songs. One was called Susie. The other was called Sweet Janine. So I pretty much overtook Mammoth. Okay, so now it was Kevin's songs and, you know, maybe a couple of yours, but mine are better. So I'm 18. So of course, mine are better. And boy, I tell you, it just started going. So we started Mammoth. We had a big keyboard, you know, with a B3, the whole nine yards. Guitar, bass, drums. Steve Crabtree was the drummer. Gary Flanagan on guitar, and I was the lead vocalist. And I had my Freddie Mercury half a mic stand thing going, you know. I had my half mic stand with scarves with the Steve Tyler scarves. So I had it going.
Well, and look at like all the comparisons to Peter Frampton. So you had it like
all
places.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't lose. I mean, I was the guy. This guy's going to be a lead singer because he is. That's just the way it is. I mean, look at him. So so then we started moving around our members a little bit. I got a new drummer. We had Van Quackenbush, who's, I don't know if you guys are familiar. Roland Quackenbush is my drummer in 2020. He's also in a band called Kickin' Jimmy, but he was in Mammoth with me for a few years. Now we had John Horvath, who is in the Nate Venturelli band. He's also in Shardy Savalas, which is a great mashup band. At any rate, I digress. So it was a new Mammoth. We ran into a guy who worked at Universal Studios in Chicago, and Universal was the place to go. You know, if you can record at Universal, you're happening. So we're recording free at Universal at midnight and 2 a.m. and stuff because he was an intern there, and we recorded a song that I wrote called "Flight of the Warrior," and "Flight of the Warrior" won the WKQX album, the second album, not the first one, the second album.
Wow.
So. Then all hell broke loose. We ran into Jam Productions, of course. In the 70s and 80s, any concert that was in Chicago, Jam promoted. You know, the Jam was they were the man. So they had us at the Aragon, the Uptown, the Park West, and we're kids. We're 19, you know, 19 years old, and it was amazing. We opened for Ronnie Montrose at the Park West, Horse Lips. Couple others. The KQX album was at the concert was at the Uptown, so we got to play the Uptown. And then, of course, when the Point East came out, then we were Point East. I mean, we played there every week. So.
And that's when you hooked up the Tom Lounges, right?
Yeah, the Tom Lounges thing. And about 80, 81, 82, I mean, all we did, we literally, there was a gentleman, his name was David Foster. He was managing the Pointies before Tom was took over. And David was our manager, our personal manager. So anybody that came in, we opened for them. Humble Pie, Savoy Brown, you know, and again, we're just kids, you know. So we opened for Steppenwolf, you know, and I'm thinking, well, the music business is easy. I'm 20 years old and I'm opening for Steppenwolf. So really quite a journey, quite an adventure. And that was with Mammoth.
Very good.
Would you like me to continue?
Oh yeah. Well,
backstage. So no, I'm interested now. Backstage. So yeah. Are you, when you're playing, when you're opening for Steppenwolf, do you get to interact with each other, or is there a separation?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. Cool. Oh, gee, yeah. Well, the person that I had the most fun with and was just the absolute, he was an absolute hoot, was Steve Marriott from Humble Pie. And we opened for them a couple of times at the Pointies. Well, the one show we were doing with them, my guitar tech or my stage manager guy, he slammed the door in the dressing room, and Steve Marriott's hand was in the eave, and he smashed his fingers. Steve Marriott. So my guitar tech smashed Steve Marriott's fingers. So Steve
That's
couldn't
tragic.
Play. So Bobby Tench, who was Steve's guitar player at the time, he came on stage with us on Mammoth, and we had to play 30 Days in the Hole, you know. I actually have a video of that here somewhere. I'll have to send it to you, Larry. It's really wonderful. And so Bobby Tench comes on with 30 Days in the Hole, and I'm singing 30 Days in the Hole. But so to continue that story. So that night, Steve Marriott comes with me and my guitar tech, the Sparky Mish, Mark Mish. We go to a hotel and women and, you know, and debauchery and stuff. So the girls leave. We're out of drugs. We're out of booze. And me, Steve Marriott, my brother, and Mark Mish, we're sitting on the bed at a hotel watching Sea Hunt at 4 a.m. I mean, and laughing and doing voices. And Steve Marriott was an absolute riot. We were together for 2 days. All we did was have fun the entire time. So that's the fun, you know, that's the fun about stuff like that. Is to come across those folks and to actually, you know, I mean, I'm just blessed to be able to have spent time with those people. I spent time with David Lee Roth and Lemmy, when I was in LA and you know, things like that. But they're just people, you know, they just happen to be rock and rollers. So.
That's true. Well, now you're starting to do some stuff, and one of the recent ones you've done is a cover of Wild World. So tell us a little bit about that, and we'll take a quick listen to that.
Okay, cool. Wild World. Well, that was a 20. I was after the Mammoth band. I was in. Well, we can talk about that a little more a little
sure.
bit later. I was in 21 Summers, and we won the Basement Tapes. As I was doing 21 Summers, I also started a band called 2020, and that was Bob O'Connor, Jim Barney, Roland Quackenbush, and myself. And I started jamming on Wild World, and I thought, you know, it'd be great if we could do a rock and roll Wild World, and that's how we did it. That's how it came out.
Well, let's take a listen to that. Kevin Friend's Wild World.
Spring.
And that was mm-hmm. Kevin Friend on his interpretation of rock interpretation of Wild World.
Wonderful. Thank you.
So, magnificent.
Right on, right on, right on. All right, all right, all right.
There you go. So how did, hitting your story, you know, Mammoth ran from win to win, and then you went on from there. We touched on that, but go ahead and tell us a little bit more about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, this was the summer of 82. We were appointees. The Mammoth band had just gotten off tour. We were on tour around the southern states, Texas, Louisiana, Florida, all up and down there. We opened for Uriah Heep. We opened for Crocus. A plethora of old time, old rock and rollers that are doing their thing back around, you know, so they do in these smaller clubs, these 1,000-seaters and stuff. And we're opening for these people while we're down in Texas. Now, this is Mammoth. Now we get back. I had just put a new band together. It was called Master. And Tony Rossi, who was in Starship for a while, he was in the band, and Roland Quackenbush and Dave Zale, who's an Indiana guy, a Hoosier guy, was the bass player. And we were just going on tour with Master. This would be, say this was a Tuesday, the next Monday we're going on tour in Texas. This is in hot July. So I've got a motorcycle. I'm going to the bank. My light man and stage manager, Billy Kreger, he's on the back of my motorcycle. We're going down Burnham Avenue in Cal City. We get T-boned. And I'm going on tour the next Monday. Billy died that day. He lost his life, and I was in a coma for 3 weeks.
Oh my God!
And obviously things changed. You know, I was out of playing rock and roll at least a year. It was just one of those things. So Master never happened. And then, as I said, Tony Rossi, he went out. He was in Starship for a while, and he's out with another band now. Michael, I can't think of his last name now. At any rate, so I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? So I had to do full rehab. I had to do physical, mental. I had a heavy brain trauma, so I had lost my memory. I didn't know my songs. I didn't even know who I was, literally, you know, when I woke up. So that was quite a struggle, to say the least. I got better, you know, about 6 months in. This is July. Now the Point East, while I was in the coma, I believe, had a benefit for me. And Steve Dahl and his crew back in the day of the 80s, when Steve Dahl was the man, you know, I mean,
right.
When he did a show, there was too many people there always, and which was the story at Point East. There were 1,000 people that couldn't get in, literally. I mean, about 1,000 people they couldn't get. That's how many people were there. So a lot of money and stuff. But my brother came into the hospital and says, "Oh yeah, we had a benefit for you." And I'm like, I'm like Scooby, you know. I had no idea what that even was or what the Point East was. And I'm like, okay, good. But within about 6 months, I still had my leg. It took 6 months to even think of healing. But I started doing acoustic shows. I said, I'm going to go out. And so my friends would come out. I'd forget the songs, you know, but that was cool. They came out and they still, so I started the acoustic.
You're listening to Art on the Air with our guest Kevin Friend on WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Then I saw that a band called 21 Summers was looking for, they were a video band and they were looking for a singer. So I went downtown and Reed Brody, who is a post-production person and he's also a songwriter, I auditioned. Now I've still got my cast, my leg in a cast, and I'm on crutches. And he's like, So at any rate, a couple of months, and they hired me to be the singer for 21 Summers. Now 21 Summers was all of Reed's songs. They weren't my songs, and I wasn't very fond of that being that way. But we were doing $50,000 videos, and I had no problem with that. so the very first song was, Little Girl, we won the basement tapes, or that week we won. We didn't win the official, that entire season basement tapes, but we won that first week. Then a few months came about, and then I did another video called I Am the One. Now, I Am the One was Reed and my song. I had some lyrics in there. He pretty much wrote the song. At any rate, that was literally what would have cost $50,000 to film. That's how technically advanced that video was. I mean, it's just as good as you see any that was on MTV in the day. So we say, hey, wait a minute. I know what we'll do. We'll go to MTV and go to the basement tapes again. So we did. And we couldn't go in as 21 Summers. We had to go in as Kevin J. Brum. And I won the basement tapes with the song I Am the One. Now, what we got from that was we got a record deal with Mega EMI in Scandinavia, strangely enough. And so 21 Summers came out. The album is 21 Summers. Now, the problem with 21 Summers is we weren't a band. We were just a video band. The people who were in the video, they actually played the music, but we never did a show. We had a record deal with Mega Records in Scandinavia, and we won the basement tapes. We never did one show the entire time we were together. Yeah, is that the craziest thing?
You know, I've seen that video, and you did not tell that you had this accident that you just described.
You certainly can't. No, and now this, of course, the original video, the little girl, I don't know if you saw that one, little girl, it's kind of a cute little thing, little toys and stuff, but little girl, I weighed about 90 pounds, which is now I weigh 90 times six, but but I was literally just coming back from the accident. This was just, I believe, about a year and 3 months after the accident, but I'm dancing and I'm, you know, when you
run
a little girl, you sure couldn't tell that I had had a massive head injury or absolutely amazing. And you know, the really beautiful thing, literally a year after the accident, this is truly 1 year after the accident, I played Jesus in Godspell in a Chicago Heights production. I played Jesus in Godspell a year after I almost died. I mean, how ironic is that?
Yeah, that's Chicago Street Theater, I think that would be in Chicago Heights, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
They do good stuff out there. Hey, Kevin, while we're at this point.
Yeah, it was really great, great production, really wonderful.
Godspell's a fun show to do. I've directed that multiple times. Hey, we'd like to listen to one of your other songs. What do you think about The Band Plays On? Would that be a good one to sample?
That's an acoustic, the acoustic one, right?
You're right, that is.
Yeah, I love that, too, sure.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Kevin Friend, The Band Plays On.
With the band we'll play harmoniously, and the crowd will rush to the stage. At the end you cry almost effortlessly, 'cause they'll never know what you mean to say. And so it goes, another day gone, and you still haven't found what you need. And the words they come, and the words they go, but the words are your only reprieve. Only reprieve. I'm headed west of town, show's over and I'm feeling lost. The streets are all I found, they will take me where I need to go. And then I'm on a stage, my head is in a rage, and they start to scream when they see it's me. 'Cause I got things that they're gonna need. And the band plays on. Yeah, the band plays on. Well, my destiny is locked in these strings, and the music will come when I call. It's so hard, it seems, to be given these things when giving is all that is for. When giving is all that is for. I'm headed west of town, show's over and I'm feeling lost. The streets are all I found, they will take me where I need to go. And then I'm on a stage, my head is in a rage. They start to scream when they see it's me, because I got things that they pay to see. And the band plays on. Yeah, the band plays on. The band will play harmoniously, and the crowd will rush to the stage. At the end you cry almost effortlessly, 'cause they'll never know what you mean to say. They'll never know what you mean to say. So you sing it loud, you sing it strong, 'cause tomorrow night is another town. And the band plays on. Yeah, the band plays on. Yeah, the band plays on. Let the band play on.
Hey, that was Kevin Friend doing an acoustic. The band plays on. So, boy,
when did you write that one?
I wrote that. I actually wrote that on the piano first, and then it was a little more subtle. And I said, wait a minute, and I put it on the acoustic guitar and did like a capo thing. And I said, no, this would be cool if I kind of jam this song, because that's what it's about. You know, the band plays on, you know. I wrote that. I actually wrote it originally, oh my dear, at least 30 years ago, and then refurbished it and rewrote it this last year. So
one thing I'd like to talk to you about, Kevin, is COVID and the pandemic. How's that impacted you? I mean, you know, some artists have kind of reclused and kind of went away, and some were inspired by it, but how did it impact you?
Well, honestly, I'm here in St. Augustine, Florida, and St. Augustine is really a magical town. It is a lot of art, a lot of music. The architecture is insane. You know, built in, you know, these buildings
town in
built
Florida,
in
Florida, isn't it?
Yeah, in the 1800s, right? Ponce de Leon came here and did this going. Then just beautiful architecture. It's just really a magical town. I have literally been everywhere. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere. I mean, I've been to Europe. I've lived in L.A. I've lived in Nashville. I've lived in Manhattan. I've, you know, obviously lived in Florida. I've been everywhere. And honestly, it might have a little bit to be the fact that I'm 64 years old, but this is absolutely the most beautiful town I've ever been in or lived in, and I probably would never leave here. As far as living here, I would love to travel and tour again, but yeah, this is just such a wonderful town. But my original point is that a lot of music. So what I do a lot here, what we do a lot is just open mics and stuff, and I'll do a couple shows now and then. So I'm not really doing a lot of live music except for these open mics, but there's so many of them. There's like five or six a week in five different places. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of different stages. You do a 15-minute set, you go in, you have fun, a lot of friends. So many dear musician friends here. There's tons of musicians here. Now, you know, if you want to, like, make it in the business, St. Augustine isn't the place to go, but there really is no more music business, you know. There is no more move to L.A. and sign a deal. You know, that doesn't happen anymore. But as far as you were asking the COVID thing, it really didn't affect me at all. I mean, I'm with Colleen as my mate, and she's a songwriter and a singer as well. And we were just vigilant. You know, we wore masks, and you know, we did our vaccinations and stuff. But you know, it didn't really affect me much because I wasn't on tour or anything, so it wasn't anything like that. Now, of course, everything closed. You know, the amphitheater and all the big places here. But yeah, it didn't really affect me much at all. We still did the open mics. So you know,
I want to take you back to childhood for a minute.
And sure.
So just like in watching all the video and listening to you now, have you always mimicked or picked up dialects and accents very easily? There was this moment when you were like, I watched Price on My Head and you did Sweet Child of Mine. Just like, if I closed my eyes, it was Axl Rose. Seriously. So I just didn't know if that was a challenge.
Yeah, I'm really like a voiceover guy. I did a bunch of voiceovers. So I can do my English accent. It's absolutely wonderful. I've done this for many years. In fact, I've spent people thought I was from England for months because every time I go out, I talk like this. Hey, darling, can I get a cocktail then right here? Yeah, then give her a cold smoke. And as far as the screaming, the falsetto, you got a smile to me. And this is something I've been able to do my whole life. I do voices. I do every accent you can imagine, from German to Russian to Mexican to whatever. Yeah, I've got quite a voice. In fact, it's almost a sin that I wasn't successful in the voiceover business. But yeah, yeah, it's something I was just always. I was always a showman, you know, since I was a little boy. I wanted to be on stage. I wanted to affect what people thought of me. You know, it's really a beautiful thing.
After that, Kevin, after that fourth grade concert, did your friend scope just increase like with each band? I mean, did that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, see, I was kind
your
of a
entourage.
Nerd, you know? Yeah, sure. Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, no, in high school now, you know, of course there's the jocks. And there's the, you know, and there's the nerds, and then there's the hippies, and then there's the, you know, that kind of thing. I was one of everything. Everybody loved me because I was in a rock and roll band, you know. The jocks, I was friends with the jocks. I was real friends with the hippies. And I was intelligent. You know, I had a high IQ. I was doing all the college grad courses and stuff. So, And then I started getting a following in high school in CD and the Snaz. So, yeah.
I love that.
You're listening to Art on the Air with our guest Kevin Friend on WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. You know, one question I have for you, Kevin, is, you know, you talked about the music business. What advice do you have to a young musician in how to break in? Because it's a totally different model than it was like you described in the 80s, 90s and stuff. You know, it's like you to be discovered by posting your things on YouTube and all the other things. But tell us your advice for them.
Well, honestly, this is how the music business is now. Kids, gather around. Let me tell you a little bit about the music business. When I was your age, when Mill and Fillmore were friendly. Now, back then in the 70s, there was actually record companies who would go to places and find people and sign them. You know, back in the 60s, for example, the Whiskey A Go-Go out in L.A. Of course, I was a big hit at Whiskey A Go-Go when I lived in Los Angeles. They would, for example, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, they play at Whiskey A Go-Go. They're signed there at Whiskey A Go-Go. Elton John did his big show at the Troubadour. And those places where that was a time when record labels actually had A&R people that went out, artists and repertoire that went out and signed people from their concert, from their showing. And like literally sign them. That doesn't happen anymore. What happens now is this, and there really is no big guy with a cigar. Hey, son, I'm going to make you a star. You know, that just doesn't happen anymore. The labels will get involved if you already have a brand. So here's what you do, because this is the only thing you can do, is basically make yourself a brand. So what I mean by that is go in the studio, get your little CD, and there's no CDs anymore. I use CDs as a coaster, but you know what I mean. But do your recording, and then what you do is you get those on all the streams. You get those on iHeart and all that stuff. Now, here's the problem. There's no music business. In other words, there's no money in any of that. The only way to make money is to go out and play, to have a full band, or you know, you can do a exclusive thing. But if you want to make it in the music business, it's honestly almost an impossibility these days. But that's how it goes on now. That's how the music business is. So you go out, you get yourself a following, you get yourself press, you get yourself, this is, look at me, look at, you know, you see all the publicity and stuff I do, and you make yourself a brand. Like Kevin Friend is this brand, this is him, and then you might get a corporation or a record label that says, all right, we're going to put some money behind this guy. Now, the problem with all that is nobody buys CDs anymore. Nobody buys albums anymore. There's no money in that anymore. The only thing you can do literally to make money is to go out and play. Hence why Aerosmith and the Rolling, not that they need the money, but that's why Styx, Journey, everybody, they're still on the road. Now they're still on the road because they love music and they're stars or whatever, but we're all 70 years old now. But they're on the road because that's where you make money. You can't make money selling records anymore. You can't make money selling CDs. It just doesn't happen anymore. There's no money in the streaming sites. There's no money in that. If you have like a million listens, you get like $2,200 or something. So
a lot of musicians are pressing vinyl again.
Now that's a beautiful thing. Now that's what I mean. Just for the sake of doing it is wonderful. I'd love to actually press about. But as I said, the problem is, what are you going to do with it? You know, you can't sell 10 million records anymore. You know, because people don't go and buy 10 million records anymore. But I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful to get back to vinyl. I've got a stack of vinyl right here at home. So,
well, Kevin, we have to, believe it or not, wrap it up, and we're going to close out with Love is a Hurting Thing. But tell us a little bit about how people can find you on the web, websites, Instagram, your social media, and everything like that real quick.
Certainly. You can go on my site. It's kevinfriendmusic.com, and that's my site. My music site, and my Facebook is just Kevin Friend. Come on, take a look at me if you'd like. Be my friend. Follow me. And I will be recording this year. I've got a new project I'm doing, all original stuff. Again, I just did a cover thing, an acoustic cover thing, which was really great. I did Smooth, Little Rock, what in the Shepherd and Mad Locomotive Breath. So it's really, really cool. And but I'm going to do a new product this year. I'll have it out. It'll be on kevinfriendmusic.com. It'll be on there. And that's where you can find me. No, I was just going to say this. Love is a Hurting Thing. This was on the MTV Basement Tape. We won that week. And again, the Reed Brody from Editel Productions, he produced this video and this song, and it's called Love is a Hurting Thing, because it is. Sometimes love is a hurting thing.
It sure is. Well, Kevin, we'd like to thank you for being on the show, and we're going to play out Love is a Hurting Thing. That's Kevin Friend, great musician from this area in the Chicago area, friend of Tom Lounges. Thank you, Tom. We were stealing your guests here. Kevin, thank you so much.
Hey, Tom.
For being on Art on the Air.
Listen, Larry, thank you guys so much. I so appreciate it. Best wishes to both of you.
You love me. You really didn't know just why you knew. And now there's only me, and I'm too lonely. show me. You swore that you loved me. Really didn't know just what you knew.
Listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art in the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP Station Manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.